to the Black History Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Nishad Carrington. Now, today we have a very special topic in person in store for you, and I can almost assure that if you are over about the age of 25, you've heard of the character Sound, for which she inspired, but you've probably never heard of her. You know, you've probably heard the sound that she's very famous for as well, but again, I can almost guarantee that you've never heard of her, and surely don't know her story. Now, for much of the internet age, her story has lived in a bit of obscure internet rumor, but you know what? Here's the thing. Here at the Black History Podcast, we've done the research for you so that you don't actually have to. But as always, if you find this topic interesting, I will highly encourage you to conduct your own search and supplement, you know, what we have presented here for you. Now, on set here at the podcast, we always seem to get a laugh when we realize, you know, just how vast the diaspora is. And really, that's the same thing that we kind of want to impart on you, our listeners, as well. You know, the number one issue that we're continually trying to espouse in each episode and topic that we cover is the fact that our history has been really kind of selectively removed from the annals of history and entertainment, philosophy, politics, economics, you name it. It's been selectively removed. Now, the pieces that we're trying, that really are permitted to remain overwhelmingly, you know, kind of seem to be strategically selective at best, and really kind of at worst, a blatant attempt to prevent credit being given where it's due. But that's why we're here, to hopefully open your eyes, ears, minds, and consciousness to the contributions of our own people to the world at large. And really, today's episode is no different. We won't often do episodes that focus on the narrative of beauty or sex appeal, you know, that's kind of been crafted throughout history, but today really is an important lesson in the fact that often the images of beauty and talent and attractiveness, appeal, desirability are quite often owing credit to the members of the diaspora. Now, I'm sure many people have probably heard of Sarah Bartman, the Hottentot Venus, you know, and that was a gross exaggeration of our females' features, you know, but then also put on display for a circus and tours and all this other stuff. Well, this one's a little bit different. Today's episode's a little different. You know, and even if really strong efforts were made to scrub the record, you know, of her existence, obviously the subtitle of this episode, Boop Boop A Doop, may give away just a little bit of the character that Esther Jones is famous for, but not much of her story. So we'll give it a go. We'll take a second right here, pause for one of our sponsors for the show, and we'll be right back with Esther Jones. Today's episode is brought to you by Make Music Count. The mission of Make Music Count is to increase elementary and secondary students' mathematical skill development through piano playing and reducing their math anxiety. By incorporating music into each lesson, students become engaged through music while simultaneously learning mathematical concepts. Each lesson is based on learning musical notes in a song. Each note is derived through solving a mathematical equation that varies from addition and subtraction all the way up to algebraic equations. Therefore, solving math equations leads directly to students learning to play the piano and a much more positive attitude towards math. If you're an educator in youth development, a concerned parent, anything, take a look at our friends at makemusiccount.com and tell them that the Black History Podcast sent you. Now back to the show. Betty Boop is one of the most iconic cartoon characters of all time, a virtual sex symbol that was created during a time where bold women were often frowned upon. The character's signature vocals stood out, but she really wouldn't exist if it wasn't for a black woman in Harlem who inspired the style. In 1930, cartoonist Max Fleischer introduced the Betty Boop character via Paramount Studios' Talkatoon series. Now, for those who may not know, and I'm going to assume it's really our younger listener crowd, Betty Boop is an animated cartoon character created by Max Fleischer with some help from some other animators, including a man named Grim Natwick. Now, the character originally appeared in the already mentioned Talkatoon and Betty Boop film series, which were produced by Fleischer Studios and released and distributed by Paramount Pictures. But she's also been featured in numerous comic strips, mass merchandising, and so many advertisements that it would be virtually impossible to list them all. Now, Betty Boop made her first appearance on August 9th, 1930, in the cartoon Dizzy Dishes, which was actually the sixth installment of the Talkatoon series. Max Fleischer finalized Betty Boop as a human character in 1932, 2 years after her debut, in the cartoon Any Rags. Now, initially, the Betty Boop character was to be the love interest of a dog that Max Fleischer had created, named Bimbo. And the character was actually depicted that way. But eventually, she was crafted into a mature, young female character. Her floppy poodle ears became hooped earrings, and her black poodle nose became a girl's button-like nose. Now, Betty Boop appeared as a supporting character in 10 cartoons as a flapper girl, who really had more heart than brain. In individual cartoons, she was often called Nancy Lee or Nan McDrew, which was actually derived from the 1930s film The Dangerous Nan McDrew, and she was usually serving as the girlfriend to the studio star Bimbo. Now, the character's voice was first performed by a woman named Margie Hines, and was later performed by several different voice actresses, including Kate Wright, Bonnie Poe, Anne Rothschild, who was also known as Little Ann Little, and most notably, Mae Questel. Now, Questel began voicing Baby Boop in 1931 and really continued voicing the character until her own death in 1998. Today, in commercials, the character is often voiced by Tress MacNeille, Sandy Fox, and Cindy Robinson. Now, again, Betty Boop was the star of the Talkatoon series by 1932, and was really given her own series that same year, beginning with the episode Stopping the Show. From that point on, she was crowned, quote, she was crowned the queen of the animated screen. The series was popular all throughout the 1930s and actually lasted until 1939 as well. The last Betty Boop cartoons were released in 1939, and a few actually made some attempts to bring the character into the swing era. In her last appearance, Rhythm on the Reservation, Betty actually drives in an open convertible labeled Betty Boop's Swing Band through a Native American reservation where she introduces the people to swing music and creates a swinging Sioux band. Now, the swinging Sioux band obviously probably didn't have the effect that they thought it would. Probably a little offensive, but either way. So now let's jump a little bit ahead to kind of the iconic status that Betty Boop was really famous for. Now, while she was originally designed as a caricature of a jazz age flapper, Betty Boop was described in a 1934 court case as, quote, combining in appearance the childish with the sophisticated. A large, round baby face with big eyes and a nose like a button, framed in somewhat careful coiffure with a very small body, of which perhaps the leading characteristic is the most self-confident little bust imaginable, end quote. Now, despite having been toned down in the mid-1930s as a result of the Hays Code to appear more reserved, she became one of the best known and popular cartoon characters in the world. Now, again, I'll put on my lawyer hat for just a quick second just to kind of explain something, but without going into too much detail, the Hays Code was essentially the first regulation of the Motion Picture Association, and it was adopted in 1930. It was really the governing document that spelled out what was acceptable and what was unacceptable for motion pictures produced for a public audience in the United States. If you will, it was a precursor to the ratings guidelines that we see today, and it covered both movies and television. Now, Betty Boop is regarded as one of the first and most famous sex symbols of the animated screen. As you can see, that's why the Hays Code would apply. She is and was a symbol of the Depression era, and really a reminder of the more carefree days of jazz age flappers. Her popularity was drawn largely from adult audiences and the cartoons, while, you know, seemingly surreal, often contained many sexual and psychological elements. Particularly in an episode of the Talkatoon, Minnie the Moocher, which featured Cab Calloway and his orchestra. Now, Betty Boop was unique amongst female cartoon characters of the time because she represented a sexualized woman, not something that was often seen during the 20s, 30s, and 40s. Other female cartoon characters of the same period, such as Minnie Mouse, would display their underwear or their bloomers regularly, but that kind of exposure was really kind of done in like a childish or comical characters. But it definitely didn't do what Betty Boop did. She really pushed the envelope, and the creation of her character and the design and the over-sexualization of the character pushed the envelope to the degree of really exposing a fully defined woman's form. Now, many other female cartoons were merely clones of their male co-stars. And I imagine you can think, again, of Minnie Mouse and Mickey Mouse. Really, the only thing they add is just some longer eyelashes, a bow in the hair, and a skirt. Other than that, she's Mickey. But Betty Boop was actually different. You know, in most of the characters, again, the addition of, you know, eyelashes and a female voice is how they would differentiate. not Betty Boop. She wore very, very short dresses, she wore high heels, she wore a garter, and her breasts were highlighted with a low, contoured upper part of her dress that showed cleavage. In her cartoons, male characters frequently would try to sneak peeks at her while she was changing or just simply going about her daily business. Now, in Betty Boop's Bamboo Isle, she does the hula wearing nothing but a lei. And obviously it's strategically placed to cover her breasts, and she has on a grass skirt as well. Now, this same suggestive outfit was repeated in her first cameo appearance in Popeye the Sailor in 1933. There was, however, a certain girlish quality to the character as well. She was drawn with a head that was more similar to a baby's head than an adult in proportion to her body. Now, this actually kind of suggested the combination of girlishness and maturity that many people saw in the flapper style and type, which, of course, Betty Boop was representative of. Now, attempts to compromise her virginity were reflected in Chestnuts in 1932, but most importantly in Boop Oop-a-Doop in 1932. In Chestnuts, the Black King goes into the house where Betty is and ties her up. When she rejects him, he pulls her out of the ropes and drags her off to the bedroom and says, "I will have you." And the bed, however, actually runs away, and Betty calls for help through the window. Bimbo, her boyfriend, comes to her rescue, and she's saved before anything vile can happen to her by the Black King. Now, I could take issue with them calling it the Black King and him being a serial rapist, but I won't for the time being. In another episode of Boop Oop-a-Doop, same year, 1932, Betty is actually a high wire performer, and the villainous ringmaster lusts for Betty as he watches her from below, singing this song, "Do Something," which is actually a song that was performed by popular singer Helen Kane. We're going to touch to Helen Kane more in just a second, so hang on to that name in your mind, Helen Kane. Now, as Betty returns to her tent, the ringmaster follows her inside, and he sensually massages her legs and surrounds her and threatens her job if she doesn't submit to his advances. This is perhaps one of the earliest portrayals of actual sexual harassment on the animated screen. And I want you to, again, think about the time and the Hays Code and these things and whatnot. It was actually very, very daring at a time when, you know, this subject matter was considered taboo. The production staff was probably pretty lucky that the Hays Code wasn't strictly enforced until 1934, or this may not have actually made it to the screen. Now, let's jump to the voice actors, all right? So what made Betty Boop even more of a household name? And to a certain degree, what made her even more appealing, even more than the garter and spit curls? It was that squeaky, sexy, innocent, provocative voice that defined the Depression-era animated character. Now, that voice belonged primarily to Mae Questel. She was actually a small-statured actress from the Bronx, whose long career eventually included a number of stage, movie, and television appearances. But it was the voice that immortalized her as Betty, which she first lent her sound to in 1931, and later actually was the same voice of Olive Oil from the Popeye cartoons, and from time to time she would actually do the voicing for Popeye. Very, not ambidextrous, what's the word I'm looking for? Very transformative. Now, we'll get to a bit of the meat of this Betty Boop controversy. I know I've been going for a couple of minutes now with some background, but let's get to the meat of why Betty Boop, which obviously was depicted as a Caucasian character, has made it to our podcast all about the African diaspora. Okay, now there's a little bit of confusion here, and some sports historians have pointed to the fact that the singer Helen Kane was the inspiration for the Betty Boop character. Animation historian Ray Pointer and Max Fleischer's nephew Bernie Fleischer have both spoken at length about how Betty Boop and her background. But what kind of results is that another white actress at the time, Clara Bow, may have actually been an early inspiration for the cartoon. Now watch this. While Helen Kane rose to fame in the late 1920s as the quote Boop Oop-a-Doop girl and really was a star of the stage, recordings, and films for Paramount, her career was nearing its end by about 1931. Paramount promoted the development of Betty Boop following Helen Kane's decline. Now, Kane found fame very early on with songs such as I Wanna Be Loved By You and incorporated the Boop-a-Doop scat, often was called baby style, into her music. Now, later on, Helen Cain would actually sue Max Fleischer and Paramount, and she alleged in the suit that they were using her image and her style for the Betty Boop character. And in May of 1932, Helen filed a $250,000 infringement lawsuit against Fleischer and Paramount Publix Corporation for the, quote, deliberate caricature that produced unfair competition, okay? So during the impending trial, Max Fleischer testified that Betty Boop purely was a product of the imaginations of himself and detailed by members of his staff. Famous actress at the time, Little Ann Little, who we mentioned prior to, Mae Questel, who did the voicing, Margie Hines, and Bonnie Poe, were all summoned to testify during the trial. Now, during the case, Lew Walton actually testified that an African-American singer under his management named Esther Jones, who was better known by her stage name Baby Esther, had used words like boo, 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 and do, do, do during her act at a New York cabaret in 1928. He said that Helen Cain and her manager had been present during that performance before Helen Cain used it in her own act. Now, in fact, Supreme Court Judge Edward J. McGoldrick ruled, the plaintiff, referring to Helen Cain, has failed to sustain either cause of action by proof of sufficient probative force. In his opinion, the baby technique of singing did not originate with Helen Cain. As you could probably guess, the courts ultimately ruled against Helen Cain after Max Fleischer produced video evidence of Baby Esther performing in a nightclub. The courts decided that Helen Cain did not have exclusive rights to the booping style, nor her image, primarily based on Fleischer's testimony. Now I'm gonna run that back and say it one more time for you, all right? The Supreme Court ruled against Cain after Max Fleischer produced video evidence of Baby Esther, Esther Jones, an African-American singer in Harlem, performing in a nightclub. And the courts decided that Cain did not have exclusive rights to the booping style, nor her image, all right? It's important and kind of comical to note here that the entire case centered around, as Max Fleischer would comment on the stand, who had coined the boop boop a doop phrase. Now, and I'll quote him here, in the courtroom, we are all talking boops and boop boop ba doop and boopity boop boops. And to that we'd say, it's not a boop, it's a boopity boop. Now, I kind of feel like Fleischer's testimony and commentary actually rings eerily similar to the lawsuit over music as well that Vanilla Ice found himself in a few years back, where he found himself on the receiving end of a complaint from David Bowie in regards to his song Ice Ice Baby and the production line of Bowie's Under Pressure. I'm going to play a clip of that really quick and just see if that does not actually kind of harken back to what Max Fleischer says about boops and boop boop a doops, and it's not a boop, it's a boopity boop. All right, so just take a second, listen to this, and we'll be right back in just a second.
We sampled them from him, but it's not the same bass line. Like it goes ding 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 ding. That's the way theirs goes. Ours goes ding 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 ding.
Now, I'm pretty sure that Vanilla Ice no longer really cares about the David Bowie lawsuit because, obviously, if, in case you didn't know, he actually owns that song now, apparently, according to an interview he did not too long ago. It was actually cheaper for him just to buy the song rather than to pay royalties because he was going to lose. Now, we'll jump back to Esther Jones, but that was just eerily similar to the, I don't want to say pettiness of the suit, but the boop boop a doop versus ding 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 did a ding, they both sound the same to me. I don't really, it's not really up for debate. I'm happy to hear your comments to it, but it sounds the same to me. Now, as the court determined in the Cain lawsuit, those famous words of boop, oop, a doop that are so famously associated with Betty Boop and the girlish booping style were first sung and performed on stage in the Harlem Cotton Club by a jazz singer named Baby Esther. Now, right here, I'm gonna take a pause just for a commercial break. Gotta keep the lights on. Stay with us and we'll be right back and I'll tell you all about Esther Jones. Now, you've heard us say it before, on this episode included, the mission of Make Music Count is to increase elementary and secondary students' mathematical skill development through piano playing while reducing their math anxiety. They incorporate music into each and every lesson, and students are really becoming engaged through music while simultaneously learning mathematical concepts. Each lesson is based on learning musical notes in a song, and the notes are derived by the youth actually solving mathematical equations. And those equations are able to be fitted for everybody's skill set, from addition and subtraction all the way up to algebraic equations. And from what I understand, they're going even further than that. Now, when you give kids the ability to learn popular songs that you hear on the radio by solving math equations, you're bringing them up to speed and you're engaging them. You're directly teaching them to play the piano, and you're also taking away that anxiety and giving them a positive attitude towards math. Check out our friends at MakeMusicCount.com. Tell them that we sent you at the Black History Podcast. Now, I said that it was actually going to get a little confusing when we start to tell about the story of Betty Boop and Esther Jones and the controversy, but this might be where you get a little disappointed with us here at the podcast, okay? Not much is known about Esther Jones, except that she was a singer at the Cotton Club, but records under that name of Esther Jones are almost entirely missing, okay? So, however, there is some evidence that Esther Jones and ultimately Baby Esther may have actually in fact been a stage name used in late October of 1934 by a woman by the name of Gertrude Saunders, not to be confused with another actress with the same name, okay? So the tough part here is that there's actually a great deal of confusion regarding the timeline of the stage names that were used, the appearance and disappearance of Baby Esther and Gertrude Saunders around the same time as Baby Esther character disappears from the record. On the scene comes a person named Gertrude Saunders. But in order to keep your minds wrapped around the concept we're dealing with here, I will continue to refer to the person in question as Esther Jones or Baby Esther. And so if I haven't already thoroughly confused you enough, let me do a little bit more, especially with regards to Gertrude Saunders, okay? As we mentioned before, the Betty Boop character was originated in 1930. Gertrude Saunders was very likely using the stage name in 1934. However, in 1934, Saunders was featured in the Baltimore Afro-American newspaper as the, quote, original Boop Boop-a-Doop girl. So maybe at the time it was common knowledge that Gertrude and Baby Esther were the same person. In fact, at the Helen Kane trial, Gertrude Saunders was actually called to the stand and confidently stated that she actually started booping before anyone else. Now we're going to continue right along again. I hope I didn't confuse you too much, but we'll get back to Esther Jones and Baby Esther. That was just a little bit of that background confusion and kind of naming differentiation that we kind of had to throw out there first, okay? So Esther Jones was a singer in Harlem who performed regularly at the Cotton Club Jazz Club, all right? Baby Esther was publicly referenced in 1928, where it was declared that she had debuted at the Cotton Club. But that's not to say that this public reference was announcing her debut. And Baby Esther was very heavily referenced as well in the Kane trial, okay? So Esther was famous on stage and in performances for making funny expressions and interpolating meaningless childlike sounds, that baby booping style, okay? At the end of each bar of music in the song, she performed at the Cotton Club audiences, a very similar thing that the Betty Boop character's voice would do in the cartoons. But unlike Helen Kane and Betty Boop, Baby Esther's baby style of singing did not bring her much in the way of mainstream fame, all right? So can we definitely answer who Baby Esther or Esther Jones or even Gertrude Saunders were? Probably not. Unfortunately, the use of the stage names were more common in the 1920s and 1930s than it is today, and the use of recording devices was available, but the live music scene was so much more prevalent in being the way that stars were born. The Boop Oop A Doop sounds were created in a live music set, and then they were recreated and reused by an artist, and then imitated and revamped by other artists. But what we do have is this: a single portrait of the person who was Baby Esther or Esther Jones. And we cannot say for entirely sure if that person is Gertrude Saunders or not. We've said that kind of ad nauseum at this point. But the photograph that is widely circulated as being that of Baby Esther is in fact not, and is instead actually a photograph of a model named Olya that was dressed as Betty Boop, with the photo actually being taken in 2008. I encourage the listeners here to actually go look at the actual Esther Jones and credit it to the cartoon creation and see if you can find inspiration, okay? So what's interesting is that the only photo that we know of that is Esther Jones or Baby Esther is a woman sitting down. It's clearly an African-American woman who's sitting down. She kind of has some, I'll say spit curls, but the best I would say otherwise would be like some baby hairs laid down with gel. That photo, that baby Esther photo, was actually taken by an African-American photographer named James Van Der, who was best known for his portraits of Black New Yorkers, with most of these photographs being taken near or around the Cotton Club in Harlem. And when the photos were taken, they would just generally be classified as Harlem lady or Harlem girl or pretty girl or college girl, which would indicate that the photo was actually taken sometime around 1927 or 1928. Baby Esther would have been a relatively young woman at this time and more likely than not a teenager, as in her early cabaret acts in the early 20s, she was a child performer, all right? So let me throw one more little bit of confusion to the mix, okay? So a scholar named Robert G. O'Mealy has said that Betty Boop was an imitation of an imitation and may have been inspired by a white woman, actually referring to Helen Kane, but that Kane had a Black grandmother. So to close out this episode, if not the full inspiration in the look, sexuality, and singing for the Betty Boop character, the course of history should at least reflect that the singing style and the infamous booping of Betty Boop came from a Black woman named Baby Esther, or maybe it was Esther Jones, or maybe it was even Gertrude Saunders. But as we mentioned, you know, the baby style of singing really didn't bring Esther Jones much in the way of fame and fortune. And unfortunately, she died in relative obscurity, presumably around 1934. It may be noteworthy here to clip some imitation, appropriation, and caricature confusion here. We see many instances in this day and age of cultural appropriation, or as the term has conveniently been referred to recently as, quote, Columbusing. You know, and we definitely see that in reference to the Betty Boop character. Esther is just one of many, many, many Black American entertainers who have been hijacked in their style, in their dress, in their talents, etc. And to that end, compensated far less, while imitators of other races have flourished in spite of otherwise mediocrity. But in this instance, that does not mean that Betty Boop is or was Black. Nor does it mean that the character was intended to be mulatto either. Now, if someone were to make a cartoon character of a white Australian female rapper who copies the exact same style or makes a compilation of the exact styles of several Black American female rappers, and then by some odd stroke of the imagination, that character becomes an icon, that doesn't make that character Black either. What that character is a living representation of appropriation. And that character just so happens to carry the stage name of Iggy Azalea. Now, I won't get too far into a tangent, as of course, I'm sure you all have learned I love hip hop. But in this instance, Betty Boop was a caricature of Helen Kane. But what made the character famous is the style and sound that her name borrows from, booping. Helen Kane was unsuccessful to prove that the sound was hers, because it was actually proven that she appropriated the style from Esther Jones and then profited from it. We must act like we've seen this before, really. You know, unfortunately, this episode doesn't have a clear directive or a happy conclusion. I really wish we could have found one, but there just isn't. Esther Jones passed away, presumably, in 1934, and whether that means the stage name ceased to be used in 1934 and the name Gertrude Saunders continued from there, we really can't definitively say, all right? We also can't even say for certain that Gertrude and Esther and baby Esther were all three the same person. This is just another instance of history that's kind of lost through time. But the confident claim that we can and, you know, we will make, and I stand by, is the same conclusion that the court came up with in the Kane and Fleischer, in the Fleischer trial. Without a doubt and unequivocally, the style of singing, the stage presence, and the most known for talent of the cartoon Betty Boop is most certainly attributable to a Black woman. Now, while Max Fleischer may have taken it from Kane and the character's design from another white woman, it does not change that Helen Kane was an imitation of the original, and has always, imitation is the most sincere form of flattery. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode. Now, please be sure to check us out each and every week for new and updated topics. In the event you have any questions or general commentary about this episode, please feel free to visit our website at www.blackhistorypodcast.com or www.thisiscarrington.com/podcast. And, you know, as we develop and grow, you'll find an archive of each week's episode, plans for future episodes, as well as additional links to books and resources that will help you in the journey of self-enlightenment. We, as always, I encourage you to share episodes with your friends, your family, your children. You know the deal. We encourage you to share episodes with everyone. Send us your feedback as well. Suggest new topics, events, or people we should cover. Or if you just wish to drop us a line and give us your thoughts or perspectives to an episode we've done, we will make every best effort to include listener mail or commentary to future episodes. Now again, as we take this journey together, we will do our best to present the diaspora in the most objective light, with some occasional commentary presented. But if you come across any errors or mistakes, please let us know. Because as we like to say here, only steel can sharpen steel. Take care, and we'll see you next week.